Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yep. Well, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's of the Nest, freedomsfeenix.com. See, don't you like that? Come on. All right. We got Peter Schiff pictures up there still. Let me pull those down and put up Keith Knight. All right, Keith, go ahead and introduce yourself while I do this.
So, my name is Keith. I run the Don't Tread on Anyone YouTube channel. I'm also on BitChute. For heaven's sake, I wish more people would subscribe to that BitChute channel just because I'm walking on thin ice with YouTube. They're dropping people like crazy for ridiculous reasons. Susan Wojcicki was just on 60 Minutes talking to Leslie Stahl about, you know, how they're policing thought crimes. And she said, well, you know, if someone, like, you know, advocates discrimination or something, then we'd take them down. It's like, okay, does that apply to affirmative action? You have people advocating for wars that kill millions. You have people advocating theft like crazy and lowering interest rates, which causes recessions. Like, how is none of this a violation of your terms of service? So it's obviously just selective, subjective nonsense to get people taken down. I basically do videos. I'm starting a new series on book summaries. So the most important books on libertarianism I come across, I try to summarize them because I know people got lives to live, and if everyone was obsessed with politics as I was, we wouldn't have food or technology or anything good. So I try to summarize it and save people some time on that stuff.
Well,
and
you're, you know, this is one thing. I've known Keith for, I don't know, what, a couple of years or something, you know, and yeah. You started your own YouTube channel just to you get a lot of the guys on. I mean, you know, Corbett enjoys going on your show, Larkin Rose, you bring a bunch of, and you do a lot of these different series, and you do a lot of research. And, you know, you've been coming to the economic discussion group, and you got the average age there is like, I don't know, 60 or something, you know, and yeah. You're 23. Come on, say it.
I am, yeah.
You're so youngin'. When I find, and you,
the reason I don't go around advertising it is it's the ultimate Trump card for, you know, anyone else to, you really don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you read a hell of a lot more than I have on this stuff, so I give you that. So this is, but it's also from, I loved when I was young. I got to ask all the stupid questions I wanted to. And then then, you know, I kind of get a beat on stuff. And you started early. So I'm encouraging, you know, that one, that you're even there and people like you and you have this interest. So when you ask Peter Schiff off air, you know, in the archive, you go, what was the question you asked him?
So I asked him how he would communicate to the layman how an economy grows.
And his was like, I don't care, buy my book. They want to know, just read damn book.
Long story short, I asked him for his thesis, which, from what I understand, most authors can give. But yeah, maybe I didn't word it correctly. I'm open to the fact that I was wrong about that.
Well, he was looking for, you know, Peter Schiff said, you know, kind of thing. And Peter, we were talking about, you know, higher end lot stuff and everything. And, you know, Keith came in. He just wanted, you know, talk to Peter Schiff because, damn, I get to talk to Peter Schiff.
Well, but I remember the moment that I was reading that book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. I was sitting on the couch at my dad's place, and it just all fell in line for me as to how that.
Well, that's how you should have prefaced it. You should have buttered him up and told him that story. And he'd, man, he'd ooze all over it.
Sure. Well, just because it had always been, well, what happened was, you know, the bankers got greedy And then there was a crash. It's like, oh, really? Well, were they not greedy before? Is there not greed in other sectors? Why does the greed?
Well,
is
you
the
read
cyclical?
The book. What do you think he should have said? What would have been a summary for you?
The problem was this was so long ago. It was before I started taking notes. What I generally think is that when you have the ability to postpone consumption and not everything you catch, you eat or consume, then you're able to use those items to build capital stock to create more goods in the future. So instead of getting a fish and eating it, you're, you know, building a bow or a bigger net so you can catch more fish.
Or you're breeding them.
So by postponing consumption, you're allowed to acquire capital, which allows you to meet consumer demand on a higher level with higher productivity over time. Something along the lines of that, something along the lines of, well, when people are free and they have property rights, they have the freedom to make more voluntary exchanges, which increases their satisfaction, which makes them wealthier. So that is how freedom leads to a wealthier, healthier society.
Yeah,
it gives people the possibility.
I know. It was like a wrench in the middle of a conversation. We're talking the repo market, the Federal Reserve, the banking of the dollar, kind of, and then all of a sudden we're back to kindergarten. And I'm going, you know, which is important. And a lot of the stuff that we were talking about in our discussion at the group last night, I understand. But I could see from Peter's perspective, man, he's at the end game of some big gazillions of dollar money.
I get that he's at the end game, but what percentage of people know such an important question? That's the problem with the leftist narrative. They got 50,000 ways, ideas on how to violently transfer money and how to distribute the wealth and all this stuff. They have no clue how wealth is created. So the fact that we don't have, you know, a quick few lines to get out there of here's what we need to explain to socialists, why some countries are wealthy and some are poor, I thought that would be a good opportunity to ask him.
All right. Yeah, sorry it didn't work out for you.
No problem at all. I'm so grateful that I got to be on and sit in on it.
Well, this discussion that we had last night, what did the young man get from that? And describe what happened last night. You know, I don't know if you know all the guys. This discussion group's been around for decades. And it's called the Leonard Reed Economic Discussion Group. Now it's the Chet Anderson Leonard Reed Economic Discussion Group because Chet Anderson is a gentleman, a guy in his mid-90s that finally passed away. And he was a great guy. And he was they're all about this, you know, light the candle, pierce the darkness kind of thing. And it was an economic discussion group on this kind of stuff. And a lot of these guys are business owners, high net worth, own a lot of something, they got some money. They are think tank people, even lobbyists, representatives from the Goldwater Institute and Cato and, you know, Institute for Justice. And you have doctors and lawyers, judges. I mean, you know, these guys, they know. But they don't really know a lot of things, you know. It's kind of certainly I'm one of the black sheep there, you know. No, not Ernie. You know, the black sheep. He'll infect them, and then you know, there's another two or three or four. Now they're, you know, you could see it just pulling them over the years this way, and then I laid it on them last night, and I go, oh, and we're gonna do this vaccine thing. Oh, batshit crazy Ernie again, you know. And then, but there's a few people are going, yeah, this is, if you don't know, you need to know more about, you know, Ernie's probably right on. So it's that kind of group. And I enjoy it. They're nice guys, but they still want their invitation to the Republican machine Christmas party. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you just feel it, you know. So they're, but they understand libertarian philosophy. They are libertarian. They're anarcho-capitalist. They're, you know, up to a point. I mean, you know, it's kind of, they see hardcore principle almost as a fault, you know? And I just, so it's just entertaining to me, but there's a few of them that are really close friends that I've been in this for, known for 30 years, and they do some ass whipping. The only reason I was invited, or I'm on their list, is because Chet Anderson wanted me to be. And the original guy that founded it. And a lot of the other people, they're going, Ernie? Do we got a vote here? I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So it's been, but it's been interesting. And Keith goes, are you on the, did you get, you know, bona fide list stuff? I mean, how does it, you just go or what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm on the list.
On the list at 23. You in, man. Because we'll talk about it more what the presentation last night was.
From the first letter of Dr. Idris Barber, I've healed many landlubbers, but could have healed countless more if they were willing to break the law to preserve themselves. The Crown required that I obey leeching privateers who didn't share my oath to do no harm. I was forbidden from discussing the treatments I knew patients needed. The Crown claims to protect landlubbers from bankrupting medical expenses, but only seduces them into begging for relief, while privateers monopolize the management of chronic illness. This royal alliance has constructed a medical hegemony that denies science, discredits alternative remedies, and mandates unwanted treatments, while callously ignoring the victims dying on waiting lists. They have produced a society increasingly addicted, impoverished, diseased, and suicidal. My conscientious objections and medical ambitions required not only seeing this cage, but leaving it. That's why I raised my black banner. Among pirates, the Crown's tantrums are irrelevant. You own your body without qualification. Open ocean medicine enables healers and customers to build a relationship of mutual consent. Prices decrease, quality increases, and physicians become as accessible as barbers. Customers determine their own medical care, whether that's experimental treatments, prohibited plants, controversial procedures, bootleg pharmaceuticals, or even the right to die. Any system of command and control is rejected. In time, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, genetic engineering, and cybernetic prosthetics could take the human condition beyond our imagination. Medical augmentation could eliminate aging, enhance intelligence, and erase our fundamental physical limitations. With the Crown in our wake and the individual at the helm, we are free to pursue an unfettered life. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Keith Knight in. Don't tread on anyone. Quit banging the mic, man.
My bad.
You know, this is a, it's interesting to have a young man like that to give some new blood into the group. I used to be the young guy. You know, I was always the kid. And these guys were like my age now, you know, or maybe even a little bit younger. And 30 years later, and all of a sudden, boom, man, they're like getting up there. And you have guys like Alan Corwin, you know, he writes a lot of gun books and everything. He's always there. He just turned 70. So he's just like going, I don't know, man, if I can keep, you know, doing all the, you know, this stuff. And so it's interesting to have the young guys come in. What happened? Well, tell the story how you started going to the event.
Well, I went to, I forget what it's called. I think it's the, it was that Arizona event where you were there. Nick Sarwark was there. David Friedman was there.
The Freedom Summit.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, okay. That's our Freedom Summit.
Okay, yeah. So I met Nick Sarwark at the Freedom Summit. He invited me to the group. I spoke with another guy there, David Dorn, who said, hey, we need a speaker. Do you have any topics? I said, I'll make the 30-minute case for anarchism that I can to try to move the minarchists a little to the correct position. So after I gave my speech, they invited me to become a permanent member there.
And the way it used to work is before the internet, you know, Chet, until he died, you know, God, it was like in nine around in there. So it was.
And who was this guy and what is he known for?
Chet was a retired, wealthy guy that was here that was a hardcore libertarian back in the day, you know, Leonard Reed guy, you know, just, has been around and it was. He started this thing, I think, in the late 70s or something, early 80s, and it used to meet at, different places. It's a nice place. It's called the University Club downtown. It's a nice, kind of a meeting place thing. It's, you know, it's a nice place. And so everybody's, you know, the hobnobs of the they, them, those. And it was to discuss Austrian economics. That was really what it was about. It was freedom, anarchism kind of thing. But it had a lot of, you know, and the people that would go in there, you'd have, you know, kind of the Cato guys, the Goldwater guys, the, you know, politicos, the Republic, the lobbyists, you know, the lawyers and doctors, and they're kind of, and it just kind of grew from that. But it kind of lost its anarchy, you know, kind of thing there for a while. But there were some guys like Randy and David that had you come. That's who you're talking about. David, they're, you know, the anarchists. Okay. They kind of, you know, it's, you know, they're Ernie's, you know, kind of maybe quieter, but they're Ernie's. So when they had you come and you did a presentation on A Case for Anarchism, and they're like, thank God, another one, you know, we need, you know. You are allowed to come, you know, that kind of thing. But it was, but it kind of, the trail got blazed for the hardcore anarchist voluntarist, I'm that libertarian thing, you know, with me. And the reason was, is because Chet was a big Ron Paul fan. And he wanted to know, and he would do every, what he would do is you gave him 12 or 9, I think, because they took the summer off or something. But you gave him like a year's worth of envelopes, self-addressed stamped envelopes, and he would type up whatever the programs like you get, you know, from Roy the email. It would be on paper. Oh my God, they use paper, and you would get it in the mail, and it would be, this is what the subject is, and we're expected to do a little bit of research on it, have something, you know, to contribute on the subject, and you just have like a discussion leader, which is sometimes they bring people in like you, but usually it's from the people there. Like Rich Stevens, which is a lawyer and does a lot of work with Jews for Preservation of Firearm Ownership, where a lot of people know him from. Rich Stevens, he's, you know, in a lot of documentaries, books, he does, and he did the presentation last night on I don't know what he'd call it.
The socialist calculation problem.
Yeah, it was. What he was doing is he passed out menus, and he just select your morning menu and your evening menu. And his wife was there to kind of total and count them up. And the point that he was making is, in the socialist utopia everybody's, you know, wants to have, and he goes, okay, well, how do you get what you want? Well, I vote. I want. He goes, all right, well, let's do it. You know, we're going to find out what everybody's going to eat. And he goes, you know, you got 17% that got what they wanted. You know, if you do this central planning kind of thing, that's just how it works. It's not going to work. You need to have a robust market that yada, yada, yada. So that was kind of the point that he was making, and he had a visual aid for using at the Christmas dinner table. I mean, that's what this was, in prep for pissing off your relatives. So it was a good way of doing it. It's kind of, you make the point, and you go, well, you're not going to get what you want if you do it this way. It needs to be a free market. Free markets is the only thing that gets you what you want, because you paid for it and it didn't cost that much. I mean, you know, this is how you get what you want. So that was the point that he was making. Well, what happened is that Keith came and gave a presentation. They're like, you are allowed to come. You know, we get you on the list, the email list. And it's a lot easier now, because before, I remember I had like years, I had those envelopes. I just never gave them to Chet. I had them. We sat them, they were in my desk for like a couple of years or something. And finally, because I'm just like, yeah, you know, whatever. And I went to him one day, I go, you know, here they are, Chet. You know, just send me the things. All right, cool, we're done. Roy goes, you know, I'm sorry, we're kind of full up, and we're just out here, and we're uninvited, and you're not allowed. They actually did this, okay. And I go, okay, well, I'm sorry to, you know, Chet had asked me for this long time. I just go, okay, no biggie. Because a lot of times I even would speak, or they would have, as a guest, they'd have me come. Well, then Chet just went ballistic on him. Are you freaking kidding me? That's exactly, because he wanted me to keep him up on the Ron Paul Evolution during 7 to 8 thing. But he wouldn't do it email. I could send him all kinds of links, and he goes, no, I want you to print it out. So I printed out like this inch thick thing of me covering and articles on and what, you know, all the stuff. And he was like, oh, this is it. And before he died, he saw the manifestation of everything that he was trying to get to. So he was so satisfied that this happened with a 70-something-year-old guy that, you know, kind of, he knew Ron from back in the day. And he was, oh, definitely Ernie. Well, Roy's kind of this Republican. We don't, you're a little too anarchist. Well, he's kind of, once that was broken, then the floodgates happened.
Well, how did Roy inherit the throne?
Because
so to speak?
He had David's position. He was a scheduler guy. So it kind of just naturally just went to him. You know, when Chet went, you know, Roy just kind of moved up, and then there's David. Now, David is a good friend, hardcore anarchist type of, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But so when you know, it'll be around. It's amazing this thing has been around as long as it has, and because it's very informative. It's a nice social function. And the one thing, and I gave the presentation last month. Were you there when I did that?
I was, yeah.
On the pirate thing?
Interplanetary file sharing.
Yeah, we talked about that too. But
yeah, and I brought Larkin Rose.
Right, and Larkin was there. So, you know, and David is always pimping Larkin's book, Most Dangerous Superstition. And for, you know, that, and these guys start reading that, and then Larkin be there, and everything, you can see how Roy's losing the battle, man. it's not going well, you know?
Yeah.
So, but he's cool about it, you know, whatever. But it keep in mind, Roy became co-chair with Senator Karen Johnson for the 08 campaign, a state chair for Ron Paul's campaign here in Arizona. But when he went to the convention, he wound up voting as a delegate for McCain. So he's always still been a McCain, kind of the Republican Party thing, you know?
Well, they were in the Vietnam War together, I guess. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, you know, yeah, he was a pilot. You know, I think he was a colonel or something, a pilot, doing something. So this is, it's an interesting group.
You're listening to the best Liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Oh, somebody dropping a bomb somewhere. Oh, there's another one. Well, we got, you know what we haven't talked about? I'll tell you what we haven't talked about. We should talk about and Trump got impeached last night, and we're done. Because I don't care. So anyway, whatever. So this group that Keith is going to influence for, you know, the rest of his life. It's interesting that it has made this turn, and the reason is because it's so obvious. And a lot of the guys, one of the lobbyists there, he represents the American for Prosperity thing, or did, and then, you know, Tom that was there. And he's written a book, and it's like 1,000 pages. And he's going to send a PDF to all of us. We get to read and help him. And I'm going, wow, man, we need a meat cleaver this thing.
I know. So Tom and I have been friends for a while. So I said, oh, gosh, you know, he sent me this thing. Fine, I guess I'll push through it and prioritize reading it for him. By page, I think, 4 or 5, I was totally hooked. It's really, really cool.
Oh, you did get it?
Yeah.
When? When did you get it?
Week ago or so.
How far are you into it?
I got 28 pages in, and that is with me taking 3 pages of notes. So,
oh my God.
So I'm gonna have
your
to
book
really
is
slow
the
down.
Book on the book.
So, well, yeah. Tom and I have some differences.
It's like
about
Tragedy and Hope 101.
Oh no! You know, it's funny because I cited Tragedy and Hope 101. He goes, I don't want to spoil it or anything, because he is definitely going to get this one published. But it was a lot of, like, linking to certain things that I thought, and then I'd go on sort of a research tangent. I went on
a novel, right?
Tangent.
Well, what's a story?
It is, yeah.
Well, what's a story? Who's the hero? How many heroes are there? Is there Jack Ryan? I mean, you know what?
There's two villains as far as I, at this point, you know, I'm so early in it. It's about a grandpa teaching his young legislator child how the world really works. And it's through the eyes of someone being an honest politician. And the honest part is, look, there are people who rule, who operate violently, and subjects, people who have to abide by the rules. So we, being in the ruler group of people, here's how we do things. And then it just goes from there. And he goes on.
Well,
every
Tom would know.
Topic.
Tom is at the, you know, he started, you know, the young guy doing the Cato thing. And then he, you know, was a communication director for the Goldwater Institute.
Yeah.
And then he went to, did some school thing. He's in the Coke-the-Puss sphere. I mean, he's one of those guys, okay?
He's got friends there, but by God, we need someone in there, you know, to
talk
in some
sense. No, he's definitely, you know, I remember when the TARP happened, that's when he and I, the one thing that I like about Tom, he's one of they, them, those. I mean, he's definitely, you know, cog in the machine of whatever the hell Coke thing. And but he's never lied to me. I mean, you know, he's always been upfront. Yeah, well, this is what I do. He used to wear around his neck on a chain, like he had a dog collar. I mean, dog tags. He had a chain, and on it was like a 3-inch. It wasn't small. It was a square about the size of the palm of your hand of AstroTurf. And he goes, because of grassroots, he goes, hey, man, you want the appearance of grassroots? I got your AstroTurf right here. It was a marketing thing. He goes, yeah, you need a crowd? I'm your crowd getter guy. You want some AstroTurf? I'm your guy. Okay. Now, when he did the first Tea Party meeting here right after the Levolution at the Arizona State Capitol. Had KFYI talk show host there, congressman, everybody's all there, and of course you have to have Ernie do the, you know, spiel because it's Ron Paul Tea Party, whatever the hell, give credibility to something. And I get up there and they got behind me all this, you know, fair tax and all this other crap. I go, I just want to make it, first thing I say, I just want to make it clear, I'm not with any of these guys.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I go, just right up front, I don't have nothing to do, but let me tell you what's going to happen. And what happened is John Shadegg, congressman here, brought back the tarp. I mean, you know, they voted no, and then within days it came back. But to get it to come back, you have to have a congressman that voted against it to bring it back. That's one of the rules on how they can do it or something. So John Shadegg drew the short straw, and he's like the guy. Well, he was going to run for Congress again. I had run against him 3 times. Now, he was my congressional target. Well, I've known him from back in the day, and it's a long story, but what happened was he gets up and he goes, and from the crowd, they're yelling, well, you did a tarp. And he goes, I know, I never. I would not. You know. He was sitting, I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? Some of the activists, we had done these big 4x8 signs that said, nationalization of the economy isn't fascist when I do it, John S.S. Shattuck. You know,
yeah,
kind of had the SS
that's
thing.
Funny.
So we did. We had hundreds of those everywhere, all over. Goldwater Institute had their 20th or 25th anniversary party at the Arizona Biltmore. I was inside while the activists were outside with those signs. They were freaking. This tarp thing, they needed to do it. And Tom was one of the guys on the crew. You get this passed or you guys don't have a job anymore.
Well, Tom has said that he never supported that. So we got to get him on there.
So this is, yeah, right.
They
go to Ernie
and say,
Ernie, if we don't do this, the economy's going to be going, I know, I don't care. You know, last time I'm like, well, come on. I go, I am going to tattoo Shattuck's ass with a swastika. He ain't never running again. And he dropped out.
Well,
and the reason, let me finish.
Okay.
And the reason is because when he said all this BS, everybody knew. We made sure they knew. But what happens? He gets to be a senior fellow of the Goldwater Institute. And I'm going, I go to these guys and I said, what the hell was that? He nationally socialized the economy. He brings in the tarp, and all of a sudden, he's a Goldwater fellow. Of what the hell is that? And Tom, they just rub their fingers together, like it's the money. And I go, all right, you know, just as long as we're up front. Now, Tom has been a really good source of information, a history, a lot of things. He's a really smart guy, well read, and a lobbyist at the state, federal level. This is his freaking wheelhouse. He knows exactly how it's done, and he wrote a book about it. So I'm looking forward to this book. I'll get a copy.
Oh, yeah.
I think Royce, I might have an email now. They're going to send it out to everybody today. But I'm just going, so how many pages? You're only 30 pages in or something? How
yeah,
far?
Yeah. But so, it's just really interesting the way he communicates. Like, there's this, you know, Tom Woods has a joke. If there was some big grand conspiracy, how would things look any different? I mean, we're lied into wars. The liars control the education system. They force you to fund it. You can't opt out of it. They say anything you want to put in your body has to go through one of our groups called the FDA group. And if they haven't given it their stamp of approval, we're going to put you in a cage and shoot you if you resist, if you try selling
without it. Hell, if you resist not wanting to take their stuff.
You and I just heard a story last night from a guy in the group who was trading Bitcoin for cash without a license, and the DEA saw it was in their jurisdiction because it was money that potentially could have been used to traffic drugs.
Peter Steinmetz.
Yeah, I didn't want to say his name.
No,
but yeah.
We all know it's a Morpheus thing, you know? He was the guy that was, you know, kind of given the Bitcoin and the money from Morpheus to do it. So he gets his DEA kicking in his door and put machine guns to his wife and child while he wasn't there.
Yeah.
He's got a bone to pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in next month or the month after, he's going to be the speaker on TSA.
Yeah, yeah. Peter's next month, and then we're going to get Tom the month after to fill us in on the book, because there really is a lot of in-depth research, and it's not just fiction. It's, you know, these fake characters, but talking about real life things. So he'll reference actual things.
So it's like current now. Is it going to be like 2020, 2022? I mean, what is it? Kind of, have you found out when the time frame is yet?
No clue, but he is citing things going back all the way throughout history and things that are happening in the present. So in one of them, he has a great one. He goes to create the, you know, illusion of a two-party system. This is where I sent him the Carol Quigley quote. He basically said, have the small government people be just as big as the big government people, but have them talk about small government. It's just so funny, because that is the world we see in front of us. The small government party, the Republicans.
This is what I like about Tom. He knows.
He knows.
He was in the machine. He knew what his job was. He did what he needed to do, and if he could, like, get out of it, I'm sure he would.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines? Not sure if this is a good time to buy or sell your home, or feel like the process can be overwhelming and confusing? This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home buying or selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what to expect before, during, and after the process. A home is a place where the most important moments in your life happen, so making sure that you know exactly what to expect along the way helps to ensure that you have control. The future is here, so let me help you move forward with your real estate needs. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. Now more than ever, you need an agent that can help you make sense of what many think is a complicated and mysterious process. Feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. 1819, or visit my webpage today at donnahancock.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, we're going to play a clip from Fox, however long it takes to load up, from Judge Napolitano talking about the impeachment. It's only a minute, so I guess we can break this much news, because freaking, I don't care. But the it's being a pain in the butt. What they're doing, what he's talking about, is that Pelosi, they did the impeachment last night, but then the House takes the impeachment, and I guess they send the articles. It's a process. They, you know, they take the football and they hand it off to the Senate. Well, I don't know if they think it's going to go the way they want or something. I don't know what the deal is here, but it looks like they don't have to. They just have it in limbo forever, you know. I don't know what the deal is, but it's interesting, you know, that they can just, yeah, we impeached them, but we don't want the Senate to get it to unimpeach or something. I don't know what's going on here. This is
Judge. The Democrats really set kind of a low standard for impeaching a president yesterday.
You know, I have been arguing that there is a legal basis for impeachment because it's really a political judgment on the part of the members of the Congress. Mm-hmm. Now I want to argue that the House has a moral and constitutional obligation to send those articles of impeachment to the Senate.
Because Nancy Pelosi has suggested she might not send it over unless it's going to be a fair trial.
Well, guess what? Under the Constitution, the Senate writes its own rules, not subject to the approval of the Speaker of the House or even the majority of the House.
Meaning they could take it up without having Nancy send it over to them?
I don't know. That's never happened. But the president is entitled to a trial at which he can seek exoneration. It could be a Lindsey Graham suggestion, mm-hmm, where, Mr. Chief Justice, we move to dismiss the charge, and the Chief Justice will decide whether or not to dismiss, or it could be a full-blown trial. But he is entitled to that forum in which to defend himself. If these articles just sit on the Speaker's desk and go nowhere, that would be a profound and grave injustice to the President.
Judge, you're talking about things that have never happened before.
Correct.
Something that has also never happened before is a purely partisan impeachment. This was House Democrats only impeaching the President of the United States.
Okay. So this is more entertainment for Dr. Frank and me, and that's all I care about. So it's this whole thing is just. Have you been paying attention to this at all?
No, I mean, the whole thing is just a long practice in moving the goalpost. Russia collusion, Trump committed an injustice, or we mean Russian meddling, or Russian hacking, or we actually mean Ukrainian interference.
They always
it's such nonsense
accuse you of what they're doing.
Exactly, exactly.
It's you know what it is. And when I got done last night, I came home at 9:30. We started. I did an hour with James Corbett last night. And the big thing a few episodes ago that he had done really hit me. And, you know, it's kind of the global banking, they, them, those, and all that kind of stuff. And my thing was, you know, I've always been going, what are we up against? We're up against something. Now, there's this thing out there. There's a philosophy, a religion of we rule you, or elite, ivory tower, all these euphemisms they put on about it. And I'm going, you know, the more and more, and it came from Dr. Frank, as we covered this process of the election and him getting elected and his presidency and all this kind of stuff, it really, he emphasized the pathology psychopaths, sociopaths, okay?
Yeah.
So the sociopath next door kind of thing. And there is 4 or 5% of the population, they just don't have empathy. And a lot of times, either it's beaten into them, something happened when they were young, or it's just a physiological, their brain does not allow them to have empathy or compassion. And if you read the Bible, you know, I read it straight through a couple of times because I was young and wanted to do it. And I go and I did the King James, and I'm like, what the hell did they say? So I did the Good News. And so I could kind of, but I thought I'd missed something. You know, they translate out the real Bible, you know, if I don't read the King James, that kind of thing. So I plowed through that. And then I did, you know, the Good News was a little bit easier to understand. And I go through that, and I could kind of see what they were talking about. Evil. When they're talking about the bad guys and how it manifests, is this sociopath mentality. It's people that had no empathy or compassion for others. And that's where Christ came in, the compassion for, you know, that was a trait that made us human, that made us better society, voluntarily works into what, as opposed to a Klingon society of freaking, I got a bigger sword and sucks to be you and you're now dead.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is what we're up against, but fortunately, it's only 4 or 5% of naturally in the population, but that percentage goes really high when you start looking at politicians and different professions of authority. And I'm going, oh, so what are we up against? We're up against a mental illness. It is a way that these people process information, and that you let us rule you. Therefore, you should be ruled, you morons. I do it because I can, and you're letting me. And the incentive, they go, crime doesn't pay. I remember Butler Schaefer, and he goes, BS.
Exactly.
Pays them a lot. You know, crime pays big time.
About $4.7 trillion a year with one group. Yeah.
So this is, you know, it's really starting to crystallize. Because I've been asking that. The audience, you've been listening a while. I'm going, what the hell are we up against? It's becoming more clear to me. A lot of people would say, oh, there's no evil. And they'll go, ah, evil doesn't. Usually it's the evil guys that says there's no evil. But, you know, and what you're up against is this mindset of no, they have no conscience. It doesn't bother them, you know, or it doesn't bother them enough. And they put people in these positions. I think Tom Jenny is bothered. I think he's in the middle of this. He did it for the right reasons. He came in. He got locked in to whatever, how he made his mortgage and whatever. He and I have had long talks before. We had him on. I'm really interested. He's gonna absolve himself. He's going to purge himself in this book. And I guarantee that's why it's so long. I'll tell you every story.
It'll be like Whitaker Chambers. He's a communist for decades and then writes a 500-page book. Witness, I'm so sorry I was a communist. It's evil. So yeah, maybe it'll be a lobbyist tell-all without him actually doing it. In the same way, I think George Orwell and Aldous Huxley, they totally had the inside info on what was going on. So they wrote fiction books about something that was real. I think Jenny's doing the same thing.
I'll bet you this may have the same impact from the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a Dick Clark kind of guy. He just looks young forever. I mean, the guy is, I remember him, he's like a kid. You know, he's now God, that's almost 25 years later or something. And he's like, he has to be in his 40s or something now or something. Yeah, I remember he was like, man, he was a young guy. He was brought up in right in the middle of this. And I'm just like, Tom, just don't lie to me, man. Just, you know, whatever. I don't care. Just don't be. And I don't believe that he may not have told me everything when, you know, everything. But I don't think he's directly lied. So I can have respect with people like that. Hey, man, that's your job. You think you're whatever. I don't care. You know, so just don't lie to me. And then we can be friends. So we've remained friends. And I'm very interested in his book. This is going to be good. I don't read a lot, you know, and this is not even published yet. I'm looking forward. I can't wait to get it.
I know. It's good.
So this is, well, the writing style, is it, you like it?
I love the writing style. It's in little letters. So it's letter one from Grandpa to Woody the joke is Woodrow Wilson is the grandson that the grandpa's writing the letter to, or it has the same name because the time placement would be off. But you totally get this psychopathic feel from how the grandpa communicates to the child of, yeah, we have the right to rule. This is the way it is.
I got a shiny badge.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I got elected
that
one way or another.
That which is justified is that which we can get away with. So it's like, oh, heavens. But yeah, you see like Bush joking around about at the White House correspondents' dinner. Oh, there's no WMDs over here. Maybe they're over there, and everyone else is laughing. And you see Obama joking about droning the Jonas Brothers if they talk to Sasha and Malia. It's like when you're actually involved in this, and then you're joking about it. You might be a psychopath if you go to the Bohemian Grove and worship that owl and do the cremation of care thing. You're probably a psychopath. I mean, imagine
they're
being responsible.
Testing you.
Imagine being responsible for all this and not being totally devastated. Like, if you're late for a meeting, you feel bad. But when these people ruin civilizations, they're like, well, that is the price we pay in order for us to have a democracy.
You know what really freaked me out? It was a clip of George Soros, and he was talking about, yeah, I enjoy more than anything else is experimenting with countries and doing things go to crap. And, well, we've experimented with populations and death, dying, and destruction. If that didn't work, we'd do this and do that. Sociopathic. I mean, it's such a thing, and people talk about it, and you're a psychopath, and they go, but it just was, it was clouds. It was way over my head. I wasn't paying attention. I'm looking down here for something, and it's just way, the evil that they describe in the Bible is so much more easily understood if you just replace it with no empathy or compassion. Boom.
Declare your independence.